Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number. Give us a call. Talk some Giants football. We'll talk about free agency. We'll talk about the draft. We have a guest coming up at 12:30. We'll be joined by Bill Rabinowitz. He covers Ohio State for the Dispatch out there in Columbus. He also wrote a book last year called The Chase, which basically chronicled Ohio State's championship season. Did that with Urban Meyer, so I figure no better person to get a outlook on all the Ohio State players coming out of the draft. And around this time each year, Lance, I kind of make a list of all the colleges and the prospects. And last year we had probably about five or six schools that had four or five guys that we knew were key. Well, I've never seen in all my years of doing the show the number of players from one school that are probably going to be day one and two picks. I mean, the way I'm seeing it, and it could even be more than this, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I got 10 Ohio State Buckeyes that are probably off the board in the first 2 days of the draft in rounds 1 through 3. That's nuts.
It is. Well, what, 22 players took part in the pro day last Friday, and there was an immense amount of turnout in terms of NFL representatives. I've seen anywhere from 6 to 7 of those 10 that you just mentioned going in round 1. And then potentially, obviously, you know, 2 or 3 more maybe in round 2. And when it's all said and done, Ohio State's probably going to hit the teens easily in terms of this class being represented in the NFL draft. There's a lot of depth. They tackle just about every single position imaginable, whether it be on defense and on offense. And I think Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott are probably the first two names that'll probably come off the board. But I still think there's a few other intriguing names here that maybe easily fall under radar, don't get nearly enough attention, but, you know, will probably show some versatility if they have an opportunity in the NFL.
And we will take calls before, joined by Bill at 12:30, and then we'll get heavy into the Ohio State guys and the draft. But we can talk about the draft before, and if you want as well, at 201-939-4513. But I think now that we've gotten through this flurry of signings and lands, we've discussed what impact the guys the Giants have brought in will have on the Giants. I would suggest, I don't know if you've done it yet, probably not. If you have a chance to listen to the Pro Football Focus spot we did yesterday with Sam Monson, he gave us some great stuff on the Giants players that they brought in. Really fascinating stuff. For the folks out there that are watching now that didn't see yesterday's show, check it out. Just phenomenal information. It's great. I can't recommend it enough. I thought he gave us great insight on some of these guys. But I think a good way to go now, Lance, is let's have a little fun. Let's rank what you think and I think are the Giants' biggest needs now that the first wave of free agency is over. So I'll go first. I'll give you a chance to think about it here because we're kind of going in fresh here.
And no problem.
And I didn't prep
you for
this.
I'm willing to have a curveball. It's no big deal.
So this is how I want to go. To me, 1, 2, and they kind of buoy back and forth a little bit. And I have a hard time determining which one I think is most important. But I still think you're looking at a veteran safety and the offensive line right now as being the two spots that I think are most important. And we've talked about the safety position all year. I know a lot of beat reporters on Twitter have been going back and forth with their folks about, you know, last year the Giants planned on that. Berhe being the starting safety next to Landon Collins. And I think that was in the plans. I mean, that was basically said by Jerry Reese at points during last offseason. But at the same time, Nat Berhe has very little experience. And Landon Collins played a full year, but heading into last year, very little experience. And you know, Nat Berhe, when he came out of school, he was considered the missile. He was great at going downhill and leveling hits. Is he a cover guy? I haven't seen enough to know if he's a cover guy. Can Bennett Jackson come back? I liked what I saw in camp last year, but that's camp. We see guys look great in camp all the time. Can he play in real NFL games in the regular season? I don't know that. I don't know if anybody knows that. Do I think he has the raw coverage skills to do it? I do. But I still want to have a safety net back there, especially considering not only Jackson and Burry's inexperienced, Lance, but also their penchant for being injured in the first couple of years of their career. I want to have a veteran guy out there that I can count on, that if the chips are down, you can throw him out there and you're not, you know, he might not be a star, but he's not going to kill you. You know, the same way they had Deion Grant at the end of his career.
Someone a reliable option.
Someone in that type of vein. So excuse me, I'll probably put safety first. I'm battling a cold, folks. I apologize in advance. Then you go to the offensive line. I know David Deal has told me many times he thinks Bobby Orr can be the starting right guard. John Jerry, he can always be in the mix there, too, at some point. But I still think right tackle is an issue you have to figure out, and I think it's an important issue you have to figure out. And Marshall Newhouse can do it. He did it last year. But I still think you'd like to try to find another person to compete with him or potentially be an upgrade when you take a look at, you know, guys out there in free agency. There are still some tackles on the board, though. The reports are that Donald Penn went back to the Raiders, signing a contract overnight. But I do think you can add a veteran, a run blocker on that end to maybe help your power run game a little bit. And then I think the third thing on my list, and frankly, I thought about putting this in the top two, but I think it's right there as number three now, is you have to find another wide receiver. I mean, there's a reason Victor Cruz was, you know, unable to play these last 2 years, really, a year and a half. And I think Victor, if he comes back, he'll be good enough to be your number two, but can he get healthy enough to do that? That's a question. I don't know if any of us know the answer to it. We hope he's working. I think the prognosis is good, but there's no way to know with injuries. You just don't. That's the way the world works. So I do think you need some other body in there, whether it's a, you know, higher round draft pick or you're talking about another free agent, though there aren't a lot of names left at wide receiver. You know, trades don't happen very often in the NFL. To me, Lance, those are the three that I would pinpoint and say that's what I would worry about the most. And then on the periphery, veteran blocking tight end, a little ahead of that, maybe another linebacker, but I think it's below those top three. And I think a fourth one, to be quite honest, even more important than running back and tight end, would be a third corner. I still think you need a guy that can depend on to go in there and play the slot. So to me, those are my priorities right now as the Giants move forward, whether it's free agency or getting ready for the draft.
Well, I would agree with you. I mean, you pretty much hit just about every position, so you didn't really leave me with a lot to further head into.
Rank them.
Well, I mean, I'll delve into a little bit more on what you mentioned. I would put a veteran safety probably at the top of the list. I would agree with you. It's not so much that there's not potential on the roster as it stands right now. It's the fact that it's sort of the state of the unknown, and I think you want to protect yourself as you do in any situation in the NFL, whether it be the lack of experience or guys that are injury-prone, and you have lack of experience and guys that are injury-prone at the safety position. So you want that security blanket, that
right
player that you can, you know, even if you don't necessarily bring him in as a starter, in the blink of an eye, you could plug him in, and he has a good grasp of what the scheme is. So that, I would say, is priority number one. Number two, I would agree with you on the offensive line. I'm going to expand, and I'm going to say a swing tackle. I'm not just looking for a right tackle. I'm not just looking for a left tackle. I'm looking for a guy that is Mr. Versatility that I could plug in on both sides. Because let's not forget this.
Or start on both sides.
Correct.
I guess.
And the reason why I think backup on the left side is important. Remember, Ereck Flowers dealt with a few injuries last year. Now, he toughed it out. He played. But I still think you want that security blanket once again who can even step in for Ereck Flowers. Because I don't think the Giants want to get into the position, John, where it's a game of musical chairs, as I like to always say, where if Flowers has to go down, then you got to move Pugh to left tackle and you got to move somebody else into the left guard spot. So I'm looking for a seasoned tackle that can play on the left side or can play on the right side. That's number two. Number three is wide receiver. Now, while it doesn't look like there's a great deal of depth on the free agent market right now, I still think there's potential to bring in a polished veteran who could be Mr. Reliable, who could play on the outside and also could be used in the slot. For example, two guys that come to mind, Marcus Colston and Anquan Boldin.
And you know what? People on Twitter brought up Boldin to me a few days ago, and I kind of dismissed it. I'm like, you know what? Wide receiver is a young man's position. The more I've thought about it, I don't know about Colston still, because I think he's had a more steady decline than Boldin has the last few years. But as a stopgap for a couple years, as a big receiver that could be a possession guy, I think I'd be okay with Boldin.
Well, I'm not even looking for a couple of years. Just give me a one-year deal,
well, exactly,
essentially.
Right.
I mean, that's what I think is content, John, just to protect Victor Cruz. Because right now, if Victor Cruz comes back fully healthy, and once again, that's probably an ideal circumstance right now. It's going to take him some time. But with Beckham, Cruz, and Dwayne Harris, I think you have a nucleus. And then if you drafted a young guy, or let's see what Jeremy Davis brings to the table, very limited opportunities for him. So clearly the resume is not done and the opportunities for him is not closed. So I think you got to give him a little bit more patience. I think you got a nucleus that's reliable for years to come. But what you need is you need somebody who is not a project, who you're not going to say, well, let's see what we get out of him in year one. You throw him in, and all of a sudden you know you're going to get productivity. That's why I think a Colston or a Bolden fit that bill. I'd put that as number three. And then number four, to me, would be depth at linebacker. And then number five is that blocking tight end, because I'm going to go back to what Jerry Reese said at the combine, and he said in the past, and I'll even group safety in this. Now, there's a distinct difference between having faith in who's on the roster and maybe perhaps still needing security, but I think they have a lot of faith in this tight end nucleus, John, and I'd be very surprised if a splash is made at that position, because I think they want to continue to grow what they have internally, and I say this every single offseason. Every time fans call in, we need this tight end, we need this tight end, they throw out one prospect after another. And I always reference the Jake Ballards of the world and all of these other unknown commodities that may have not been the best all-around tight ends, but they took advantage of their opportunities and they flourished. I think the Giants are still sticking to that type of a game plan, and I wouldn't be surprised if that continues this year.
How about third corner? You didn't mention that.
Third corner, I would put, you know what, I would put third corner ahead of linebacker.
So you put that in the fourth
spot.
That's
fourth, and the reason why it's fourth.
So we're exactly on the same page. How
we are. It is unfortunate. But here, let me add some rationale.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you mentioned the numbers game. You have Trevin Wade, but, you know, because of the injury bug and everything, just simply based on the numbers game, John, I don't even know if Trevin Wade is penciled in to man the slot. I think you want competition there.
Absolutely.
So the fact that J'Ron Hosley and Tremaine McBride right now are on the market, you have to bring somebody in that I think is going to compete for that third spot, unless they bring in a versatile safety who, to me, can play the slot, and you could also provide him being as that third safety. That would be perhaps option B in the slot corner situation. But to me, corner, I think, is more of a priority than depth at linebacker as well as depth at tight end.
And you think they're good at running back. I don't think there's any
Absolutely.
More need there. How about this? And you know what? I didn't bring this up in my list. And we had this conversation yesterday with Sam from Pro Football Focus. Right now, other than, and I know Hankins had one good year rushing the passer, but he's had two years where he really hasn't gotten a lot of pressure. So you don't know what he's quite going to give you at tackle. Other than Vernon and JPP, two premier pass rushers, obviously, you want other guys that you can rotate in and out that can get pressure. And right now, I don't know if the Giants have those guys. You know, Kerry Wynn can do it a little bit, Jay Bromley maybe a little bit. But I do think some depth of defensive line is something you're going to see come in here, whether it's in free agency or the draft, where Steve Spagnuolo can maybe bring another defensive end where you can move JPP or Vernon inside on a pass situation if you want to go in that direction. So I think another defensive lineman or two that can put a little pressure on the quarterback wouldn't be a bad thing either.
Well, another name is Owa, who missed the majority
last season.
That's
a great point. I forgot about him.
He, to
great
me,
point.
Is a redshirt rookie, so I would throw him into the list with Wynn and Bromley, who you threw out there. I agree, though, and I've said this time and time again, John. I know it's still early, and I obviously am going to preface my statement by saying I have the right to change my mind. As it stands right now, I still think defensive lineman is the target in the first round, at least if the decision was up to me.
I think it's on the table. To me, it's not a must pick. Like, if I think a corner, for example, is a much better player than the defensive lineman, then I'm going to pick the corner.
That's fair. But to me right now, I'm still sticking with depth of defensive line. Even if you're not necessarily bringing him in to be a starter, I think the philosophy of this organization in years where they've gone on Super Bowl runs is to have multiple options. And I still think there's room to add a young guy. The other thing is, you mentioned free agency. If you look at last year, they brought in a George Selvey player. So they could go maybe that
right.
route, late in free agency. You bring in somebody that has had some experience, maybe hasn't gotten a great deal of opportunity in his previous team. You could sort of move him in as a rotational defensive end. I would think like a George Selvey type of target could be an option.
I'm with you. All right, folks, 201-939-4513. We'll take your calls until 12:30. Then we'll be joined by Bill Rabinowitz then, and then we'll take your calls to wrap up the show. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. John is in New Jersey. He's going to lead us off today. John, what's going on?
How are you, fellas?
Doing great, Johnny. John. How are you?
First of all, I want to just say the guy from Pro Football Focus yesterday,
yeah.
That was a fantastic interview. I hope you guys bring him back on.
Yeah, we will, definitely. He's great.
So I just wanted to talk about the wide receiver situation. I know you guys both kind of ranked it third on your list of priorities, but I really think you're underestimating the importance of that for this team. To me, despite the additions they've made on defense, this is not going to be a defensive football team. They're an offensive team. And I don't think anybody would argue that their two greatest assets are their quarterback and Odell Beckham. I think they're putting themselves in a situation where teams are going to be able to neutralize those two best assets. They don't have another receiver on this team right now that is a threat to do anything. They don't have a guy who can beat single coverage. I think we all want Victor Cruz to come back healthy. I don't think, obviously, we can rely on that. And either John or Lance, one of you mentioned if he does come back, you think he could be a number two. To me, even if Victor Cruz is like 100% Victor Cruz, he's a slot guy. Like, who's playing on the other side of the field opposite of Beckham when inevitably he's going to be getting double teamed, maybe triple teamed, and we don't have a guy on the other side of the field that can beat single
coverage? Well, I mean, it doesn't matter where he lines up. I mean, if you look at the Packers, for example, Randall Cobb's their number two receiver, and he's primarily a slot receiver, and that's fine when they have Jordy Nelson healthy.
Plus, they can also line up a running back, too. Don't overlook that. I mean, you mentioned the importance of the wide receiver. I think there's more potential to get Shane Vereen involved as a wide receiver and Rashad Jennings, much more so than we saw this past season.
But, John, I think overall your point, I understand. And if you want to put wide receiver at one or two on your list, I think it's right in the same neighborhood as those other things. You know how you have your list, and you know you have like a number four that could be far down the list at number four, or a number four that's nearly the same as one or two. I agree with you. I think wide receiver is something the team still needs to address. And if they decide that's a higher priority, and I don't know what the front office is thinking, then you know bringing in a veteran safety or bringing in an offensive lineman, I get that, and I wouldn't have a problem with that either. So I totally see where you're coming from.
Those things are important, obviously. I'm not saying they're not.
Of course.
But I feel like those things you could fill maybe a little bit easier, even in the draft, where I think 10 is going to be too high to go with like a Treadwell or a Doxson or something. So now we're getting into the second, third round, and you have to wait for a second, third round draft pick to develop as a receiver. I think you can get guys to play slot corner, to play linebacker, to play safety, even to be another pass rusher, that are going to come into the league more polished and ready to play. I just really think – I think they missed an opportunity to get a playmaker at the other receiver position.
Well, like who? John, like who, though,
well, yeah, Lance makes a good point. Yeah. I mean, the guys that were out there, you're looking at Marvin Jones, who got basically as much money as Victor Cruz got. I mean, Mohamed Sanu got almost as much as that. I mean, they're frankly – the wide receiver class in free agency just wasn't very strong.
Those were the top two guys. I mean, who else –
Rashard Matthews,
did you
get excited about that?
I mean, not necessarily a proven commodity with Miami last season. That was his first breakout campaign.
Yeah, John, that's the thing. I'm not sure if they had any great options in free agency that match the type of player you're looking for.
What is the type of player they're looking for, then? I mean, you're right. It wasn't like a wealth of options at the receiver position, but I also think what has already gone off the board is better than what's available now, although I do like your Bolden suggestion that you made before.
Well, John, I mean, once again, I agree with you, and I think it is a priority to add depth at that position. But, you know, let's not forget what the Carolina Panthers did this past season. And, you know, I think sometimes we get caught up in names and automatically guys that are going to draw double teams. And you certainly need reliable guys that are going to beat single coverage. But, I mean, Carolina lost its best wide receiver in training camp last season. Guys stepped up, made most of their opportunity, and they relied on the running game. So, you know, I know you're looking at last season, and I would agree with you. If I went back to last season, I would say Eli Manning and Odell Beckham were your two most reliable options. But I think the importance of this season is not to duplicate where you left off last season, but to bring more balance as a team. So the defense needs take huge strides. Rides forward. You got to go from 32nd to, you know, at least 15th here. You want to get to the middle of the table. And at the same time, John, you want to get that running game going so that Eli Manning and Odell Beckham doesn't have to be that 1-2 punch every single down, every single game. Balance, to me, is the biggest storyline this year, more so than, well, we saw what happened when they shut down Beckham. We don't necessarily have a reliable option. Well, that's more of a reason why you should rely on the running game and you should rely on your defense making more stops this coming season.
But
that, to me, is more prevalent.
At the same time, Lance and I wouldn't object to adding a guy like Bolden or Colston either.
Absolutely not.
To at least give you a stopgap here. And, you know, you say it's too high at number 10 for a wide receiver. I've seen some mock drafts have a wide receiver go between 10 and 15. I don't think it's out of the question if you really like one of the players. I don't know what the Giants think about those guys, to be honest with you. But do I think a receiver at 10 is out of the question based on Jerry Reese's draft history? Certainly not. If he thinks the guy that's there that's a playmaker, he's going to pick him. So that's the way I look at it.
Thank you, fellas.
Hey, thanks, John. Great point. But look, we did not mean to, you know, as Shakes would say, poo-poo the wide receiver
position.
No, there's
no poo-poo here.
No, yeah, we're not. And it, look, it is important. Well, and, you know, you love to have crews there, but you just don't know.
Well, and I think it's also important to put things in perspective here. It's one thing to say wide receivers in need. It's another thing to say, well, we're just going to bring in who maybe the court of public opinion thinks is the best option
right
now. That best option may not be a good fit for your scheme or your system. So I think when you look at the free agency market, Alshon Jeffrey was given the franchise tag, so I think you and I went back and forth a lot leading up to free agency. Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, I think it's fair to say those were pretty much the top two options.
And I think you like Sanu more, I like Jones more, which
I like Sanu mainly because of his versatility and maybe what Ben McAdoo could do with him.
That's fine.
They were both taken off the board. Sanu went to the Falcons. Marvin Jones went to the Lions.
At very high prices.
At very high prices, I would agree with that. And then after that, you know, I mean, I think it's a mixture here where you can maybe see how the market settles down before you maybe target a wide receiver. And I still think getting a seasoned veteran, as I mentioned, like a Colston, like an Anquan Boldin, somebody also threw out on Twitter, and we'll get to more of your tweets, the name Andre Johnson. I would be concerned about Andre Johnson lower on the totem pole from a Colston and a Boldin losing a step, as you referenced earlier in the program with respect to Colston. I thought Johnson may, because of the injuries, the knee. I don't know if maybe he's as reliable as those other two guys.
I personally, I'd have to look at the numbers again. I haven't done this comparison. But just off the top of my head, I'd probably put Johnson and Colston closer to each other. And I think Boldin, and it's funny, we asked Sam about this yesterday from Pro Football Focus. And we asked, you know, how effective is Boldin? So as a wide receiver, he goes, well, here's a good thing about Anquan Boldin. You say you lose a lot of speed as you get older. Well, Anquan Boldin never had any speed to begin with.
That's true.
So he's a good receiver without being fast. So he can maintain that skill set longer because of his size, his route running, his smarts, and all that sort of stuff. So I would put Boldin, and then I'd have, yeah, Andre Johnson. He had such a decline last year.
He was also like the fourth or fifth option on that team. But
with
still,
a rotating quarterback
correct.
Situation, that was
yeah.
a mess. I get all
here's
that.
Here's the thing with Boldin, and I think that's a good observation, that he was never a, you know, blazing speed type of guy, especially since he played with Larry Fitzgerald for so many years. When he's had a quarterback, his numbers have been consistent.
I mean, even his big year with Kaepernick 2 years ago, when Kaepernick had his best year, his numbers were off the chart. Didn't he catch 85 balls?
Something in that neighborhood. And even last year, I mean, I know he had a good game against the Giants, but, you know, even in between all the struggles with Kaepernick and even when Blaine Gabbert came in, Boldin was still, you know, a reliable guy, more so than any other option in that receiving core. Age, to me, is not something that I would be scared away from when you look at Anquan Boldin's numbers. The guy's durable, the guy's tough, and the guy's going to get you that big first down.
And Eli's been dying to have somebody to throw that back shoulder throw to since Akeem Nicks left. Perfect, perfect guy. Boldin, in his big year with Kaepernick, 83 catches, 1,062
right
yards, five touchdowns a year before that, 85 catches, 1,179, seven touchdowns. And then last year, he was 69 for 789. And four touchdowns. But you're looking, you know, those two San Francisco years are actually outliers. If you go back to when he joined the Ravens in 2010 to 2015, he's had between 57 and 70 receptions in four of those six seasons. The other two he had in the 80s. So you know what you're getting with Anquan Boldin. I get he's 35, and he's going to be 36 in October. But to me, he could still give you something and be a help. 201.
Well, and not to go over, just look at the amount of games he's also played, you know, as he's gotten later on in age, too. You know, I'm not saying that he's playing 16 games every season,
14,
but he's not going
16,
to like 9.
16, 15, 14, 16, 15, 12, 12, 16, 14, 10, 16.
He's been fairly durable.
That's pretty damn durable.
At 35, actually. I'll take that.
Absolutely. AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I like what the Giants did on the first day of free agency. They were aggressive, and the front four looked good on paper.
Yep. We agree, AJ.
Agree
what's your
you,
question?
Oh, yeah.
You got a question, AJ?
Oh, one more thing. Wilson Kuhn, he's still out there. The Giants get a very, very offensive tackle.
Yeah, Okung has made a few visits based on multiple reports across the league. Obviously, he's dealt with some injuries with the Seattle Seahawks.
Also representing himself.
Yes, he is his own agent, which he's done in the past, so that's not necessarily a surprise.
Thanks for the call, AJ.
Right now, he's testing his options. And, you know, I think the important thing to take note in with a guy like Russell Okung, and Paul and I talked about this on Monday, is the fact that, you know, he's been a left tackle with the Seahawks.
Right.
who knows, you know, what his mindset is.
I'm sure he wants to get paid like a left tackle.
And he may want to play left tackle, too.
That's
and
true.
He may
want to
start at left tackle.
Yeah.
So he may be a good fit. You know, and I said the importance of bringing in a guy who could play both sides, and I think he would fit that bill. But if the player doesn't have the mindset where he'd be willing to move to the right side, you know, I don't know how attractive all of a sudden that player
Remember,
is
anymore. Remember, Frazier is a two-way street. The Giants, you know, might want a player, but does that player want to be with the Giants based on what he wants to do? So that's something we'll have to find out. We'll be joined by Bill Rabinowitz in a few minutes, but first, Steve in West Point. He joins us right now. Steve, good afternoon. How are you?
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Doing well, Steve. How are you?
Fantastic. I just wanted to talk about Antoine Bowen, too, because I just heard the other caller brought up points in my brain that we don't really have anyone commanding attention away from Odell. And I think at least if we get Baldwin in, I think you at least you can't ignore him as a defensive coordinator. You have to give some kind of attention to him, and I think we lack that right now. And another point that I was calling up for is I really love Jerry Reese's offseason so far. I think he's done a fantastic job. He's got young players with promising talent, and as far as a GM, you can't really ask much more than what he's done. My only worry is, and this actually goes with the corner as well, the corner position, with JPP's contract being a one-year contract, I think that was a smart move on both parts. And my only worry is the money we gave Olivier Vernon, when JPP plays this year, if he does phenomenal and we want to re-sign him, I worry about the contract we gave Olivier Vernon, how much money he's going to demand from us, JPP, to re-sign him next year. If he has a phenomenal year, he's definitely going to want Olivier Vernon's type of money. And then, but we still have to carry over some of this money from free agency spending this year to next year so we can sign guys like, you know, the free agents we have next year.
Steve, you make a great point. You make a great point. I think it would be a great problem to have because that means JPP has a great year and your defensive line is probably pretty effective. You get after the quarterback and you win a lot of games. So I think it's a problem the Giants would welcome. But, yeah, I think that would back the argument for why maybe you don't spend all the money this year in free agency and you hold some back for next year because then you get Justin Pugh coming up. You get Jonathan Hankins coming up. The year after that, you have Weston Richburg coming up. Odell Beckham at some point.
Yeah.
But I think the way you look at it, Steve, is that you have this window with Eli where he's going to have another 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is, where you think he's going to be a top quarterback. You try to win in those 3, 4, 5 years. And then, quite frankly, you figure it out. And if you have 1 year where you have to pay the piper, and, you know, maybe you have to have a lot of dead money because you have to let guys go and you have one really bad year, then maybe that's the year you get your replacement quarterback in the draft. And I think you do everything you can to make the run now, and then you figure out those things later. But you're right. JPP's thing could be interesting next year if he does have a monster year. I see where you're coming from.
And the other thing to keep in mind, Steve, is while contracts look huge right now, I mean, you can also restructure and rework deals down the line.
Cap's going up.
Correct. And the cap is going to increase, so that'll give you a little bit more wiggle room. And that's also another reason why I brought up earlier, it never hurts to add depth at those positions in case you lose somebody in free agency that you didn't anticipate. That's why I still think the defensive line is not necessarily a bad direction for the Giants to go in.
Thanks for the call, Steve.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You're right. And, you know, that way if JPP does happen to get away next year, you have a young guy in the draft that you might be able to replace him with. And there's no team that has more young guys in the draft that'll probably go in the first couple days that I've seen in a decade than the Ohio State Buckeyes. And joining us to talk about them is Bill Rabinowitz. He covers them for the Dispatch out there in Columbus. He also is the author of a book called The Chase, the story of Ohio State's national championship season from a couple years ago. Bill, John Schmelk, Lance Meadow, Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Thank you for joining us and good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic, and we figured who better to give us a feel for this dozen or so Ohio State players that are going to have their names called on Thursday and Friday of this year's draft, Bill. And let's get right at it. I'll start with Joey Bosa. I realize that he's probably not going to be on the board for the Giants. Just want to kind of get a feel for him from you. He was suspended for a game last year. His total production as a pass rusher, maybe not where you wanted in terms of sack numbers. I've heard him described as a guy with a very high floor but maybe a lower ceiling. Do you think that's a fair description of Joey Bosa? Is he limited in terms of super high-end athleticism? Do you think high floor, low ceiling is an accurate description?
Well, I definitely agree that he has a high floor. I think a lot of people compare him or hopefully compare him to a J.J. Watt kind of guy, and I think that's an unfair comparison for anybody because J.J. Watt's in a class by himself. I think Joey Bosa has a considerable ceiling. I think that last year he kind of took one for the team in a lot of ways. He was double-teamed, even triple-teamed at times. The fact that teams, that offensive coordinators, he was the first guy that offensive coordinator said, okay, how do we deal with this guy? And so they geared their game plan to slowing him, which opened things up for other players. But I think anyone who watched Ohio State at length last year realized that he was the guy that made the whole thing kind of start.
Bill, when you look at his numbers at the combine, you know, a number of people said that, you know, maybe he didn't necessarily jump off the page with his 40-yard dash, his bench press. His numbers looked a little bit better at Pro Day. How much do you think that elevated his stock based on the fact that he stood out a little bit more?
Yeah, I think it does. Typically, Ohio State players do run better on the turf at their practice field than they do the combine. The combine generally is considered a slow track. I think for linemen, defensive or offensive linemen, the 40-yard dash is not the greatest. I mean, how many times do they run 40 yards? It's not that big a deal.
Absolutely.
It's more the agility. It's more the strength. And I think those things – and he just has it. He has great football instincts. He's very good against the run, which can be overlooked for a defensive end. Everyone wants to talk about sack numbers. He's very, very good against the run. He was much better at being disciplined last year and not getting out of his gaps, which he had a problem with earlier in his career. And he grew up a lot. I think he became a leader last year, and he really wasn't a leader the first 2 years he was at Ohio State.
Last question for me on Bosa. Did he play much right end for Ohio State, or was he primarily a left defensive end for the Buckeyes?
They flip-flop. They did a lot. In fact, he played inside some of the time. He was actually primarily on the right side. But he can play anywhere. He didn't really play nose tackle, but he played the three technique a decent amount and did pretty well there because Ohio State was a little thinner on the inside of their defensive line than the outside. They had some other guys, so sometimes they had him play inside, and he was good there too.
Real quick, you know, I was at the combine, and I saw him speak to the media. He is one laid-back dude. You know, usually you got these defensive linemen. They're all fired up. You know, they're confident. They're over the top. And he's like, hey, guys, what's going on? I was just surprised by his personality. It fascinated me.
Yeah. I'm not sure I should share this, but, you know, at times I've kind of referred to him to others privately as kind of like Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He kind of has that vibe to him. Now, he's not a dumb guy by any means. He's not that character, but that vibe kind of like nothing phases him. He just kind of is in a little bit of his own world a little bit, just kind of chilling. That's Joey Bosa.
And by the way, you mentioned the agility drills. He did do very well at the combine in his three-cone drill and his 20-yard shuttle, two things that really do have a big effect on defensive linemen sometimes. Lance, you want to hit on Ezekiel Elliott, right?
Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott, certainly one of the other notable names out of a very large class, as we talked about off the top. And Elliott's stock has really been on the rise, I think, when you look at mock drafts, Bill. I think most people understand what he brings to the table, but, I mean, if you're really to put his game under the microscope, where does he need to improve, whether it be as a running back or a wide receiver, if there are any areas of improvement?
The thing about him is that when you really analyze the things that a running back's supposed to do, he does them all. He obviously is a very good runner. He can run with power. He can run away from you. He can run over you. But I think the things that really stand out even more sometimes are his blocking. And he's a good pass catcher. He broke his wrist in training camp of his sophomore season, and he had a hard time, obviously, catching the ball that year, the championship year. He was healed last year, and he's a really very natural hand. So he is a complete running back, and that's the thing that Ohio State coaches will tell you, is that he can do it all. He's a good guy in the locker room. He's conscientious. You know, he had little blips. He got benched, didn't start one game his sophomore year against Illinois because he wasn't taking care of his academics as much as he should have. But he's a really good student. He got into the prestigious business school here at Ohio State, which is a pretty big deal, a 3.0 student. I mean, he went to a college prep high school, so academics matter to him. The funny thing is he and Bosa lived together, and they were described to me when I wrote the book as kind of an old married couple. They would bicker all the time, and finally Bosa said, "I can't. I'm done. I'm moving out." So, but that was kind of an odd couple. I'm not sure which one's Felix and which one's Oscar, but they were kind of an odd couple, that's for sure.
You know, it's funny, Bill, talking about Elliott. You know, I've been going over these drafts for, you know, a bunch of years now, and I don't know if I can remember a player that I couldn't find anyone to tell me something bad about their game. He seems like such a complete guy. Can you give me anything, a hint of a weakness in his game, or maybe he still needs to get a little bit better if he wants to be a top-flight running back in the NFL?
Boy, that's a tough question. I think he's as close to I would say a perfect player. Nobody's a perfect player. But in terms of things he can't do, you know, boy,
that's what I mean.
A little bit more elusive in the hole. I mean, he's not. I got spoiled watching Braxton Miller in the pocket or, you know, scrambling. He's not Braxton Miller. He doesn't have that kind of elusiveness. But he has very good vision, and once he gets to the second level, it's very hard to catch him. So, if you're really nitpicking, I would say that maybe it doesn't really dance, you know, around guys very much. He's more just kind of outruns them or one quick move kind of thing, which in the NFL is actually what you want. You don't want guys dancing around. There's only one Barry Sanders. So, but that's as close as I can come. Sorry.
Talking with Bill Rabinowitz, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Columbus Dispatch and was at Pro Day, where there's about 22 players that were showcased, and who knows, nearly six or seven may go in the first round. From what we're hearing in these mock drafts, Bill, you know, Ezekiel Elliott could very well be a top five pick. However, when you take into consideration where running backs have gone in recent years, other than last year when Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon went in round one, most teams don't want to take a chance on a running back. From what you described, though, the fact that he is so well-versed in a lot of different areas, is this pure hype? Or do you think that when it comes down to the draft, he truly will go as a potential top five pick here?
Well, I think top five is going to be a stretch just because I think the Trent Richardson thing really kind of ruined it for running backs going that high. But in his defense, in Elliott's defense, he is a three-down back. You don't have to take him out to pass block. You don't have to take him out on third down in third-down passing situations. He can do it all. He played 2 years, carried the ball a lot in those 2 years at Ohio State. So there's that consideration. But he wasn't a three-year guy. And there were a lot of games that he didn't carry a ton because Ohio State was so far ahead. So I don't think the tread on the tire argument is something to look at. I don't think it's a kind of a disqualifying thing by any means. He's not Derrick Henry running 35 times a game. So I think he's certainly where the Giants pick at 10. I think that's a reasonable pick. I don't think that's a reach for where Elliott might go if he goes with the Giants. Much earlier than that, I'd be a little surprised.
All right, I want to move on to the defense a little bit here. Bill, we're joined by Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch. And Bill, Eli Apple is a guy that's kind of named in the top group of corners in this draft. It still seems to be kind of a chef's choice type of deal, depending on what system you play, who you like best. From what you saw from Eli Apple at Ohio State, how do you see him transitioning to the NFL? I've seen some people say that maybe he takes advantage of the lenient contact rules in college, and in the NFL, you might see some laundry flying if he gets a little too aggressive out there on opposing wide receivers.
Yeah, that was a bit of an issue for him. I mean, he did, you know, the NFL, you can't bump after 5 yards, and he's certainly Ohio State is coached there. You bump. You're very physical with receivers until the ball's in the air. He had a few interference calls and that kind of thing, but that's what Ohio State wanted him to do. He's a tall, rangy guy. One of the more interesting stories that I wrote about in the book was his freshman year, his first year on campus, he started just slowing down. He just had no endurance, and it turned out he had an iron deficiency. And at one point it was so bad that he was outrun in a sprint by a 340-pound defensive tackle. And the coach said, okay, that's enough. We're going to get this checked out. I got it checked out. They put him on whatever medication it was, and he's fine now. But that was a huge issue for him early in his career. In terms of he's a smart guy. He's a conscientious guy. He wants to be a great player. I think that most of the people analyzing him now think of him more as a potential guy than a guy that put him together at Ohio State. He was good at Ohio State. I think most people think his best football is ahead of him.
He's a draft-eligible redshirt sophomore, Bill, and you mentioned the iron deficiency, so he missed some time early in his career. How much does perhaps lack of experience play a role into where he'll ultimately be taken and the fact that maybe he could use a little bit more polish and seasoning?
Yeah, that's a huge question for teams. There's no doubt about it. He was a two-year starter. He started on the championship team and then started last year as the kind of the leader on that group as a redshirt sophomore. And he played well, but I don't think that you would put him in the class of guys like Sean Springs, Antoine Winfield, those kind of guys that Ohio State's had over the years. He could have been. If he'd stayed this year and played that third year, would he have been in that class? You know, very possibly. That's just one of those things that NFL teams have to, again, decide whether his potential makes him worth a high first-round pick.
One more quickie. Did he play inside at all for Ohio State, or is he primarily an outside corner?
He played, now you got me thinking. He was the boundary corner. The boundary corner.
Got it. All right. Bill, another redshirt sophomore that is coming out is Darren Lee. And talking to scouts when I was out there in Indy, people are darn near obsessed with this guy's athleticism. I know he played quarterback and corner in high school. He's a guy that I guess can just run all over the field and is a flat-out playmaker, huh?
Yeah, I love Darren Lee as a player. I really do. I like him as a person too, but as a player, I think he's very dynamic. He reminds me a little bit of Ryan Shazier, who was his predecessor at Ohio State. Very dynamic, very quick. There was a play he made in the Fiesta Bowl against Notre Dame that I just kind of shook my head about. He was coming in on a blitz, and it turned out it was a wide receiver screen. He had taken two or three steps as a blitzer, recognized the play, and then made the tackle on the wide receiver.
Wow.
And I remember watching that going, how did he get from there to there so fast? And that's Darren Lee. He just has this incredible explosion when it comes to just that burst of speed. He's not the most physical guy. He's a good tackler, but he's not a guy who's going to light you up. But he is a pretty sure tackler. I don't think he had as many big plays last year as he had at the end, particularly of 2014. I thought he was the best player in the field, or one of them, certainly, against Alabama in the Sugar Bowl that year. I thought he was just a dynamic guy. Again, as you said, he was a high school quarterback. Urban Meyer did not want to offer him a scholarship. Luke Fickell was the one who really fought for him, and it turned out to be one of Luke Fickell's, big best decisions he ever made in terms of trying to convince and successfully convincing Urban Meyer to give him a scholarship, because he was a marginal kind of three-star guy. And he just exploded onto the scene the spring practice of 2014 and just ran with it.
Bill, when you look at Darren Lee's measurements, a number of people aren't quite sure, based on their projections, whether or not he truly would be a weak side linebacker, or potentially they can maybe move him into the safety position. And, when I've looked at Lee, he reminds me of the whole debate over Shaq Thompson last year out of Washington, who eventually went to the Carolina Panthers, whether he was a tweener. Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Where do you see him projecting at the next level in the NFL? Is he truly a linebacker, or is there potential for a team to maybe slide him in as that third versatile safety?
I think he's more of a linebacker. I just thought about this when you were talking about it. The guy that he reminds me of a little bit, and I haven't seen him a lot in the pros, but I saw him at Nebraska, was Lavonte David. He's a smallish linebacker, but just a really dynamic athlete. I remember seeing him against Ohio State covering that game and thinking, man, that guy, I'd like that guy on my team if I'm an NFL guy. And that's the kind of guy that I think he is. He might not fit the prototype, but I think actually the prototype for the NFL, in terms of linebackers, is shifting a little bit toward the Darren Lee type, where it's more speed. It's not the thumper so much like a Joshua Perry, but more of a guy who's a speed guy. And I think that, could he play safety in a pinch? Yeah. I mean, he ran a 4.43 or something ridiculous at the combine. So can he? Sure. But I think he's more of a linebacker.
One more real quick one on Darren Lee for me, Bill. Do you think his frame is such, and maybe this is a tough question to answer for you, do you think he'll be able to put on some more muscle, some more weight, if he has to bulk up just a little bit to be an NFL linebacker?
Yeah, I talked to him after the combine, before Pro Day, and he weighed into the combine at 232, and he was pretty disappointed about it. He wanted to weigh at 235, 236, and that is what he weighed at Ohio State's Pro Day. So, yeah, a little bit. He enrolled at Ohio State. He was 197 pounds.
Wow.
That's what he was at Ohio State. Again, for all these guys, and I'm not – well, I am kind of, but not really trying to sell the book, but all the background on all these guys is in my book. So, but in his stories, Darren Lee is one of the more interesting ones. I mean, he came to an Ohio State camp wearing polka dot socks, and Meyer looks at him and goes, you know, a quarterback from New Albany, which is the suburb he's from, wearing polka dot socks is not exactly what I'm looking for.
That's great.
So, but yeah, I think Darren Lee is, other than Bosa and maybe Elliott, I think Darren Lee might have the brightest future in the NFL to all these guys.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing that we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT, claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We're joined by Bill Rabinowitz, covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Dispatch, also the author of The Chase, a book detailing Ohio State's championship season a couple years back, so make sure you go check that out. But let's stay on defense here. Adolphus Washington, big defensive tackle. Was that the defensive tackle that outran Eli Apple on that sprint? Because I know he's a big boy, but I don't think he weighs quite 340.
No, it wasn't him. It was another guy, Chris Carter, who really was kind of a bit player, but no.
All right.
I like Adolphus. I mean, he's had a tough end of his career. He got cited for that solicitation, and he got suspended because he was carrying a weapon at the time, which was legal. I mean, he had the paperwork for it, but one of Urban Meyer's core principles is that you don't carry weapons. So he was suspended for the Fiesta Bowl. Then, of course, he pulls his hamstring at Pro Day and, you know, didn't have a great combine. So I think his stock is slipping a little bit. I like him as a player. I think he's an underrated cog in Ohio State's success. He's a nice young man. I mean, he's just, people will tell you he's just kind of a sweetheart of a guy. And I feel bad that things seem to be kind of going south a little bit for him. But I think, especially if he slips like the third round, I think he could be a steal, because I think he may not be a measurable guy in terms of the 40, but he's very strong. He's very quick. He's got a good initial push, and he's a team guy.
Well, Bill, speaking of quickness, I don't think there's any doubt that Braxton Miller certainly knows how to run based on what he did at Pro Day and what we've seen on the football field. But, you know, it's sort of interesting to evaluate him as a player. And I think the biggest question is he a gadget player or is he a legitimate wide receiver at the next level? So from what you've seen, you know, where do you think his best spot is at the National Football League? Can he be reliable enough to step in and be a number two or a number three wide receiver? Or is he going to be more of a jack-of-all-trades type of guy?
Well, he's not going to be a flash. He's not going to be Cordell Stewart because he's not going to throw. I was watching him. I happened to be out there watching him warm up for Pro Day the day before, and he can throw a ball lightly for 20 yards, but he told me, I had a big story on him at the end of last year, he's done as a quarterback because he just doesn't trust a shoulder. He just never wants to experience that pain again that he had when it went out the second time. So he is a wide receiver. He's accepted that, which is a hard thing for a lot of quarterbacks to do, because in their mind, they're always a quarterback. Once a quarterback, always a quarterback. I think he's turned the page, and I think he's really determined to be a great wide receiver. He has all the attributes to do it. He's got, obviously, the speed. He's obviously raw in his route running because he hasn't done it. But he's incredibly elusive. He's still got a lot to learn. I think he's got natural hands. He was underutilized last year. I don't think Ohio State ever quite figured out how to use him. And with all the weapons they had, Ezekiel Elliott, Michael Thomas, and you go down the list, I think they just never quite found the right role for him. And he had some spectacular moments, but it just wasn't consistent.
Is he the type of guy that will do all the extra work necessary to learn the nuances of the wide receiver position? Does he have that work ethic in him to make that switch and put the work in you need to make it?
Yeah, I think he does. There were questions early in his career as a quarterback at Ohio State about his work ethic in terms of, I mean, he did the work certainly, but was he a guy who lived in the weight room or in the film room? No, he wasn't. I think he got closer to that before he got hurt. And I think he's really embraced the wide receiver position now. I think that he is determined to make it and prove everybody wrong. And I think in certain ways the injury was a blessing in disguise because it just sped along that process. I think he probably was going to end up as a wide receiver anyway. I think he wanted to be a quarterback, but once that avenue was closed, I think he's moved on. And I, It's going to take a little time. I don't think anyone should draft him in the, let's say, second round and think he's going to walk in day one and be a 40, 50 catch guy. That's not realistic. But give him 2 or 3 years, could he be that kind of guy? Absolutely.
Talking with Bill Rabinowitz, who covers the Buckeyes for the Columbus Dispatch. Staying at the wide receiver position, Bill, Michael Thomas is another guy that has received some attention at the receiver position, not necessarily like Braxton Miller, has really stuck to that position. How would you evaluate his game, and where do you think he winds up when you look at how the draft will play out?
Yeah, he was actually Ohio State's number one receiver last year, not Braxton Miller. He was the guy that in crunch time they threw to him. He's a tall guy, very physical guy, very good hands, very confident in himself. He's Keyshawn Johnson's nephew, so he gets it, comes by it naturally. He doesn't have blazing speed, but he's 6'3", something like that, 6'3", 215, if I remember right, something like that.
Yeah, right in that ballpark.
More of a physical receiver, very good in the red zone, very good body control. The catch he made against Alabama from Evan Spencer, that gadget play at the end of the first half, was as good a catch as you'll ever see, contorting his body, keeping his foot down. He wants to be great. There's no question that he wants to be great. And if not for the fact he's not a blazer, I think he'd be a definite first-round pick. And I think if he lasts middle of the second round or beyond that, I think I'd certainly take him.
In terms of putting you on the spot, in terms of who has more upside, is it Thomas or Miller from what you've seen? Did we lose Bill?
Has more.
Yeah. Who do you think has more upside in terms of longevity in the National Football League?
Looks like we might have lost Bill.
May have lost Bill. Bad connection.
All right,
Dave.
Dave, why don't you hang up on him? We'll try to call him back. I thought you got him really upset with your question.
Apparently, yeah. That's what it was, the question.
All right. We got a couple more players to knock off with Bill here. We'll try to get him done. We got Michael Thomas. We're going to do Von Bell, Taylor Decker, and Nick Vinette. So
the tight end.
We'll touch on them when we get back. Remember, fans, in the meantime, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. John Schmuck, Lance Meadow, Big Blue Kickoff Live on a Wednesday afternoon on Giants.com. By the way, a little nugget for you, completely unrelated, as I was going through our Twitter questions. Damon Stoudemire is going to be the head coach at Pacific.
Really?
How about that?
Okay. A little nugget there to drop in.
We got him back? All right. We welcome back Bill Rabinowitz. Bill, we lost you. We only got a couple more players to go through, I promise. We thank you for being patient with your time. Lance asked a question. More upside, Braxton Miller or Michael Thomas?
Yeah, that's a good question. I could hear you guys. You obviously couldn't hear me. I think Braxton certainly has more room to grow to get to his potential because he's been a receiver for 1 year. But I wouldn't act as if Michael Thomas doesn't have upside. I think he does. But again, he's a little limited because he's not a 4.4 guy. But I think they would, if they were on the same team, for example, I think they'd complement each other really well. Not that I expect that to happen, but I think that they're just very different kind of receivers.
General question, tough transition from the Ohio State passing attack to go to the NFL for a receiver. Are there pro concepts in there, or is it mostly spread stuff that guys really will have to adjust to the NFL when they get there?
Yeah, there'll be an adjustment. It's a spread offense, and they have to read what the defense is doing. And it's very kind of intuitive. I mean, if they do this, you do that kind of thing. So, I think there is going to be a learning curve for them. But, I don't think it's any kind of crazy radical offense. It's just kind of what Ohio State runs.
Well, the one other guy to me that is intriguing is Nick Vinette, the tight end. A lot of people, I know Giants fans specifically, love to find, Bill, a guy that can block. They're not too worried about a receiver considering the Giants have some upside there. How is he as a blocker, Nick Vinette, as opposed to what he brings to the table in running routes and so forth?
Early in his career, that was a liability. He was definitely the pass-catching tight end. He was kind of Jeff Heirman's understudy and played maybe, 25 snaps a game. But Jeff Heirman, his last year, 2004, he was hurt a lot. So Nick Vinette played a decent amount and then was the full-time guy last year. He's more of a natural pass catcher, but Nick has told me that he really became a very good blocker last year because he had to become that way. That's the expectation in Ohio State. Ohio State traditionally their tight ends have been blockers first, and anything they get as a pass catcher is a bonus. And Manette only had 19 catches, I think, last year, no touchdowns, which is kind of a stunning thing because he's certainly a capable receiver. He has good hands. He's got good speed, good frame. He's improved as a blocker. The NFL level have to keep improving, but yeah, it's not a liability anymore, and it used to be.
So based on what you're saying, you think he was definitely underutilized in the passing game, and you shouldn't really judge him by his numbers.
No, certainly not as a pass catcher. And again, it goes back to what I said about Braxton, is they had so many guys, Ezekiel and Michael Thomas and Braxton and Van Nett and Jalen Marshall and all these other guys, and I just think that it was only one ball, and that became an issue a little bit.
All right, two last guys. I want to touch on Taylor Decker real quick, a right tackle. Do you think he can sneak into the second day, around two or around three? I know Giant fans have kind of been wanting for a couple years a tough as nails, you know, road grinder, run blocking right tackle. Does he fit that description?
Yeah, I think he's a guy, if you drafted mid to late first round, I don't think he slips in the third round, certainly, maybe early second round. I think that he's a guy that you draft and you say, okay, you're the right tackle for the next 5 years, and you're pretty set. Is he spectacular? No, he's not. He's not an Orlando Pace kind of guy that's the standard here at Ohio State, but he's very solid, and he's a good character guy, and low maintenance pick.
Well, in terms of the one last position that we haven't hit on, back on the defensive side, I know Ohio State's got a few safeties, most notably Von Bell. Talk about the safety group overall and, you know, where you think they may pan out when it comes to the draft.
Yeah, I really like Von Bell. I like his athleticism. He was a five-star guy that Ohio State, when they got him, to round out their 2013 recruiting class, which is one of the great ones of all time, that was kind of the icing on the cake. He had a little bit of a bumpy start. I think he was a little too confident in himself, didn't work as hard as he should have. But then he got with the program and really became a dynamic guy and terrific speed, very good instincts. He studies hard. He made a play, a key interception against Alabama in the Sugar Bowl because he knew what the play was going to be because he had studied it so much. And it combined that kind of rare athleticism with the study habits that he has, I think that he can be a really dynamic player. He's not the biggest guy, and that's why he might not go in the first round, but I think he's a terrific athlete.
Now, Powell is a little bit taller in terms of his frame. Is there a huge disparity between those two, or Bell is still considered the top guy of the two?
Yeah, I think Bell is clearly considered the top guy. I think Tyvus Powell came out because first, he was a redshirt junior, so he'd already graduated. So the guys he came in with and played with were all leaving, and I think he thought, you know, why not? I've already graduated. There's no reason to come back. I don't think he's the elite prospect that Bell is, but he made a lot of big plays at Ohio State. I mean, a lot of big plays that you can't take that away from him. But I think there's some questions about him. He was hurt, had some injuries that prevented him from lifting a lot and getting as strong as he wanted to be. Those injuries are now in the past, he's told me, and so he's able to work out and get bigger and stronger, and I think that's one of the things that he has to prove.
Bill, did we miss anybody? Maybe we hit 10 guys. Is there anybody that you think that could be an impact player in the NFL that we didn't touch on?
Well, a lot of people think that Jalen Marshall came out too soon. He should have stayed in school, and I probably think they're probably right. But he's a really smooth athlete, maybe not a 4.5 or 4.4 kind of guy, but just a great balance, just a nice knack. Could be a good punt returner if he's daring, put it that way, on punt returns, which will give coaches ulcers, but he catches it. I mean, he doesn't. It's sometimes you'll leave that one alone, and he picks it up. You're like, oh, man. But then he makes a play. So just one of those guys who makes plays. But I think he's a mid to late round guy. Who else is there? I think there are 14 that we had that people are thinking that are going to be drafted.
Josh Perry?
I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody.
Josh Perry, is he a guy that you like?
Yeah, Josh Perry. Yeah, he'll be like a second round pick, I would think, second or third round. More of a thumper kind of guy, but first of all, incredibly conscientious, leader on the field, universally liked and respected. He will be a great community service guy, and he's a good player. He's a little stiff. He's admitted that he kind of has to work on the lateral movement and prove that he can be that kind of player for NFL teams. He's decent speed and just straight line speed, but the flexibility and the agility is a bit of a question. But second, third round pick, you know, like kind of like Taylor Decker, you pick him and you don't have to worry about him, and he's on your team for 5 years and he helps you.
Now, is this considered the best Ohio State draft class in the history of the school?
Yeah, there was one, and I'm trying to think. I have too much in my head. Either 95 or 2005 it was a very similar class with coming off championship teams or teams that should have won a championship. But yeah, in terms of these guys left a legacy. The seniors won 50 out of 54 games. It's just
wow,
unbelievable what they did. And last year they went 12-1, and people think it's a disappointment, which in some ways it was. They didn't go back to playoff. You're 12-1, and people here are, you know, upset. So, you know, these guys, maybe the biggest adjustment these guys are all going to have to make is going to a league where the average team obviously is 8-8. You know, losing is not the end of the world, and losing happens all the time. And it doesn't happen all the time at Ohio State.
Bill Rabinowitz, he covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Columbus Dispatch, also author of the book called The Chase, his chronicle of the Ohio State championship season in 2014. Great stuff in their insight on a lot of the players coming out in the draft, Urban Meyer's program, all that great stuff. Bill, we can't thank you enough. You were the first of our college spots we've done this year featuring the draft. We figure we start with the biggest and the best, and you gave us some great information. Thanks so much for the patience and the time, and we'll talk to you again real soon, all right?
Thanks a lot, Bill.
It's been my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
No, you're very welcome, Bill. Good stuff out of Bill Rabinowitz, again, Columbus Dispatch, in his book, The Chase, on Ohio State's national championship season back in 2014. Well, Dan Salamone somewhere is very happy. I will say that.
He tweeted out that he's happy.
Dude,
so
he was texting me about killing Joey Bosa. He's all upset.
It's a very touchy-feely, sensitive subject. Got to be careful. He's going to put you under the microscope.
Of course, our junior writer here next to Mr. Eisen, Buckeye alumni.
Yes, strong ties there.
And if we come out of this draft without a Buckeye, he is going to be the angriest man in this building.
I think he'll
angry
recover.
No, I don't know if he will.
He's got a Buckeye on the roster the last time I checked.
He might quit.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. He may quit. He may quit because he has to interact with you more so than where the Giants.
So I guess the
draft.
Worst case scenario, they don't draft the Buckeye, then they trade Hankins on draft night.
Well, that's
and
what
he's
I was
in a lot
say.
Of trouble.
Yes, that may be troubling. Indeed.
Lance, fun times.
Indeed.
You're back with Anita tomorrow?
Yes.
So
and we'll have Stephen Miller. Damon Harrison, Snacks' college coach, the guy that helped recruit him to William Penn in Iowa and then ultimately made the big jump to the NFL.
Maybe you can get a good story on the Rice Krispie treat rumor.
Oh, we will, indeed. We will look into the Snacks. We'll work up an appetite for tomorrow's show.
Absolutely.
There's a tease for you.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live. Of course, for the archive, go to Giants.com. Go to click on the video link, Big Blue Kickoff, and you will see all our shows up there. You can also download them via podcast. And, folks, remember, you can still vote in the New York Giants Bracket Challenge. Go to Giants.com/bracket. We're on to round two now, Dave, or in the round one? Huh? Round two begins tomorrow, so round one finishes today. Place your vote. Who do you think is the best first-round draft pick in New York Giants history? There's a couple close ones, though. I think the Rodney Hampton JPP is close. You can impact that one. Everything else, I think, has kind of been pulled away a little bit, though. Kyle Rodo will still be in the mix there in his competition. I think he's going up against Ike Hilliard, if I remember right. So check it out, Giants.com/bracket. And, of course, free agency, Giants.com/free agency. You can check that out as well as they track the players remaining on the free agent market. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Lance and Anita tomorrow. Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Well, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.